Hello, everyone, and welcome to our The Week That Was in Europe podcast. My name is Dirk Schumacher. I'm the head of European macro research at Natixis. And with me, as usual, is Klaus Adam, professor of economics at the University of Mannheim.
Welcome also from my side. So there is no shortage of news coming out of Europe this week. For one, Italian Prime Minister Draghi resigned after the Five Star Movement and thereafter also center-right parties such as the Lega Nord and Forza Italia decided not to support him anymore. Elections now look very likely and will most likely be scheduled somewhere in later in September. And Draghi will remain as a caretaker until then, but of course it's unclear whether a reform-oriented government will emerge after the next elections. So Italian uncertainty has certainly shot up.
A different kind of uncertainty has been at least partially and temporarily resolved. That is concerning Russian gas flows via Nord Stream 1, which resumed, I stress at least for now. But it's also that only a third of its max capacity is coming through the pipeline. And again, that can change any time. The times of Russia as a reliable energy provider are over and may not come back anymore, probably at least under the current regime. In data terms, we'll have later some data, but we will skip that. And Klaus, jump to the ECB meeting.
Yes, so the big event of this week certainly was the ECB meeting, which is going to be our main topic today. It was certainly one of the more difficult meetings of the ECB, as the institution had to calibrate the size of the first interest rate hike, the first hike in more than 10 years' time. And against this backdrop of having a failing government in Italy and a relatively large country spread of the Italian bond versus the German bond, the ECB tries to achieve several different objectives at the same time, which are not necessarily easily to align. So, but let's start with what has been announced in terms of the policy decisions. So the ECB hiked its policy rate by half a percentage point, implying that the deposit rate, which at this point in time is the relevant policy rate, is now back at zero. Markets priced in on the day before the meeting a 50-50 chance of the interest rate increase being either a quarter of a percent or a half a percent, and chances actually dropped, for 50% for half a percent increase after Mario Draghi's resignation. So the fact that the ECB nevertheless hiked by half a percentage point was certainly a hawkish surprise. On this end.
Yeah, the ECB also introduced a so-called transmission protection instrument as a new policy tool. Under this new program instrument, the ECB can buy, under specific conditions, sovereign debt in specific countries to ensure that transmission of its policy stance is equally, more or less, across the euro area, or at least that there is a transmission of its policy stance. Before we discuss each of these decisions in more detail, it appears that both of the decisions were closely related in terms of a quid pro quo between various factions within the governing council. The 50 basis point interest rate hike, a bigger hike than initially signaled, was, if you will, the price for getting unanimous approval of the TPI. At least that's an interpretation which makes a lot of sense to me.
Of course, this is not the impression President Lagarde wanted to give at the press conference. She pointed to a further worsening of the inflation dynamics relative to what was foreseeable in the June meeting as one of the reasons behind the bigger than initially envisaged rate hike. In particular, she said the ECB expects, and now I quote, inflation to remain undesirably high for some time, end quote, before then inflation will start to decline. She also said that beyond the current rate increase, that a further normalization remains appropriate but the ECB will take a meeting-by-meeting approach conditional on the economic data at hand. So there is no forward guidance anymore on future policy from now on, and which means that every future meeting can be live.
And it's understandable that the ECB does not provide any specific forward guidance anymore. After all, the credibility of any such announcement would be very low, given the decision to go for 50 basis point hike after stating the clear intention for a 25 basis point hike following the June meeting. And this episode points to a general problem with any form of forward guidance in practice, in that it usually lacks the necessary commitment to be fully credible. Central banks often cite a change of circumstances when changing their minds, such as President Lagarde did when she said inflation was higher than they thought, but that conditionality is seldomly spelled out when the forward guidance is initially made.
Yes, just to make this example, at the June meeting last month, the ECB simply announced that, I quote, that the governing council intends to raise the key ECB interest rates by 25 basis points at its July monetary policy meeting, end quote, without any further qualifications. And the absence of qualifications simply appeared attractive at the time, even not putting the obvious ones in there, as these would undermine to some degree the strength and credibility of the forward guidance. But in this week's July meeting, it was quite likely that it was not the incoming data, inflation data, that led to the decision to opt for a bigger hike, but rather the bigger hike was a deal between the hawks and doves in the governing council, where the doves obtained unanimous support for the new instrument and the hawks in return got a bigger rate hike.
And regarding the future rate path, the ECB stated that a further normalization remains, I quote, appropriate. But the ECB will take a meeting-by-meeting approach conditionally on the economic data at hand. The ultimate target for ECB policy rates remains, I quote, a broadly neutral setting, though President Lagarde freely admitted that it was not clear what rate level would be implied by a neutral stance. And we talked in last week's podcast about the difficulties in establishing where the neutral rate is. And I, for one, have full sympathy for not being too precise here, because there is a lot of uncertainty. And, well, you'll see once you get there, but making these kind of ex ante announcements, that's probably would be a mistake.
So while the rate hike was a surprise, the real big news of the meeting was the introduction of the new transmission protection instrument. And this will be activated to counter, I quote, unwarranted disorderly market dynamics, end quote, in countries that see, quote, deterioration in financing conditions not warranted by country-specific fundamentals, end quote. That is, of course, quite a statement to make, as disorderly and unwarranted are, well, let's say, subjective terms, and so is the notion of financing conditions that are warranted by fundamentals. We'll come to this issue later on again. The ECB emphasized that there will be no restriction ex ante on the scale of the purchases, and that purchases will concentrate, to the extent they will take place, on public sector debt with a maturity between 1 and 10 years, even if it's not ruled out that other assets will be bought as well.
Yeah, and when it comes to those conditions, the ECB will use four criteria when judging to activate the TPI. First, compliance with the EU fiscal framework of that country where the ECB wants to intervene, or in which debt markets it wants to intervene. That means no excessive deficit procedure and not having to fail to take effective action against those excessive deficits. Second, an absence of severe macro imbalances according to the excessive imbalances procedure. That's an official procedure run by the or undertaken by the European Commission, and not having failed to take corrective actions if such imbalances have occurred.
Yeah, and then there are two more criteria. Number three, it's called fiscal sustainability. Here, the ECB will largely rely on its own assessment. And even if it will take as input the assessments of other institutions, ESM, IMF, etc., but it's not going to be bound by those. It's going to make its own assessment about the fiscal sustainability. And then number four, sound and sustainable macro policy, which effectively means compliance with the recovery and resilience plan and the country-specific recommendations made by the European Commission under the European semester. And then finally, you know, just to add up on this, the ECB will use a wide range of not further specified indicators to assess whether a market distortion is taking place or not. So if you look at this and ask who would be formally ruled out from a program, there's only just one country I could see, which is Romania, because it's still currently in an excessive deficit procedure.
And President Lagarde stressed several times that it was a discretion of the ECB to decide if and when to activate the TPI within these limits. In particular, the ECB is not bound by other institutions' assessment regarding the fiscal sustainability of a country. As the assessment of these institutions, say the IMF, the ESM, the European Commission, is only used as an input into the decision, but does not represent a binding constraint. So unless a country is an excessive deficit procedure or macro imbalances procedure, the ECB can broadly do as it pleases.
Yeah, and then there are several questions that arise when assessing now this program. First, it seems to me it's somewhat unclear what kind of program it is. Is it a backstop like the OMT, or is it intended to be an active program more like the APP or the PEP have been? Presently, to me, it looks a little bit more like a backstop, but who knows? And second, it's unclear what fiscally sound here really is supposed to mean. In particular, what is the correct fundamentally justified interest rate that the country should pay on the market? I think it's anyone's guess. So given this, there is a lot of discretion on the ECB side in terms of activating the program. And then another issue is that given the somewhat fuzzy conditions that are spelled out and overall the very weak conditionalities, what there is clearly a risk that the ECB's policy decisions will be politicized further. For sure, there's always some degree of judgment involved in using all the criteria when deciding whether or not to activate a spread containment program such as the TPI, but it looks like it will become a very, very challenging situation for the ECB to uphold its neutrality here. And also the perception of neutrality will be challenged by governments, perhaps by banks, perhaps by financial market participants.
Yeah, and I think this is especially true when the ECB sees itself confronted with a populist government. How much of a spread widening on the back of political uncertainty should be considered fundamentally justified? Answering this question is simply impossible. As a result, any ECB decision about spread containment or not will easily be interpreted as politically motivated, especially by a populist government, whether right or not, but certainly such a government may want to create that impression to have a scapegoat for things that might go wrong. And given the lack of detail about the TPI program, it seems highly likely that financial markets will soon test the ECB's willingness to activate it in order to find out what this is all about.
Yeah, so a test is probably going to come soon. Even if Ms. Lagarde expressed during the press conference the hope of not having to activate the instrument. And this is perhaps so because in case of activation, really a number of difficult questions that have been sidestepped for now will have to be answered. For one, there's the question, you know, once the ECB starts buying, it needs to specify conditions and targets that should be achieved by the purchases. It's unclear how these targets will be set and adjusted over time.
It's probably also true that the easy part is to start the purchases, but what if a country starts embarking on an unresponsible path once the ECB has its back? How can you then ever stop purchasing, given that no private investor will continue to buy the country's debt if the ECB will stop buying or says it's intended to stop buying because the country is on a irresponsible fiscal path? So once the ECB starts buying, it may be more or less hooked, or it is willing to risk a severe crisis, which obviously you cannot rule out, but it shows that once it starts buying, the odds or the weight of the decision gets even bigger.
Yeah, it's really unclear how the ECB can possibly deal with the incentive problems that emerge in a situation where a country has an effectively permanent backing by the ECB, because the ECB cannot credibly threaten to exit the program. And then will the ECB start writing letters again to governments like Jean-Claude Trichet did to the Italian government during the last sovereign debt crisis? I'm not sure these are appropriate instruments. So given these problems, the hurdles for an activation of the TPI may be rather high in the end, and probably not much lower than those for the already existing OMT program, which Mario Draghi has created and which has never been activated. And I would also expect that given the weak conditionalities and the fuzziness in the overall design, it might be legally challenged in the European Court of Justice and most certainly by someone in the German Constitutional Court.
Yeah, but well, all what we just said sound pretty critical. We should also stress that the ECB is clearly operating in a world of second best solutions. With Europe facing enormous geopolitical challenges, it's understandable that now seems not the right time to address some of the more fundamental questions in the architecture of the monetary union head on that the new instrument in effect exposes. But it still remains an ominous sign for the long-run stability of the monetary union that the ECB is not in a position to hike rates without at the same time providing a safety net for fiscally weaker countries. This clearly shows the limits of the one-size-fits-all monetary policy that was in the end the very idea behind the creation of the monetary union.
Right, so then there's one final interesting piece of information, and it was the decision that the Governing Council will evaluate options for remunerating excess liquidity holdings. That is quite an interesting statement to make. The deposit rate is now at zero, but it will most likely increase above zero in the near future. And that would mean that the ECB would have to pay banks a positive interest rate on all their excess liquidity. And given the size of outstanding excess reserves over and above the minimum reserve requirements, these payments could become very large over time, especially if interest rates have to increase by a lot in case inflation does not easily stabilize. And that would amount to a large financial loss to the ECB, and as a result of that, to reduced senior risk payments to the governments. So the declaration to evaluate the options about the remuneration of reserves indicate that the ECB will want to protect itself against these financial risks. And I could see various elements that could play here a role. They didn't mention them yet explicitly, but they could think of increasing the minimum reserve requirements. They could think of a system of tiered remuneration or other ways to reduce financial payments to banks in the future.
Yeah, that's certainly going to be interesting to watch how that plays out. But to sum up, so Italian spreads have widened since yesterday, suggesting that the market has some doubts about the new instrument, or at least wants to probe further on that. And it's safe to say that Italian political developments will drive spreads in the coming weeks. And we then will find out how effective this new tool will be in the end, whether the ECB has to activate it and how that all play out. That is certainly a topic we will come back in some future podcast. Thanks again, Klaus, for your time. We'll resume after the summer break. So there is a summer break coming. Listeners can decide whether it's well-deserved or not. But in any case, it was a lot of fun doing this podcast, and we certainly will resume.